Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. Fall is well upon us, and school is back in session, and this seemed like a good time for part two of our occasional series on education and schooling. We'll have our usual gloom and doom, this time delivered by Chris Hedges. And we'll have some fun. Father Guido Sarducci will explain how you can get a good college education in 20 minutes for $20. And we'll learn more about marketing products inside the classroom. I myself am back in a classroom for the first time in 15 years. I'm teaching a section of freshman composition at a nearby university. I'm a part-time adjunct instructor, which puts me at the bottom of the academic totem pole. Well, at least I've got plenty of very good company down here. Goodness knows the American system of schooling is in need of reform. Not surprisingly, the reforms the politicians and the CEOs are pushing are not reforms at all, though, but rather plunder and destruction. Why are they doing it? First, money. Second, they want a workforce trained to perform narrow tasks without question. They do not want anybody able to question and critique the failed corporate neoliberal economic system. This has been their agenda for more than 100 years, going back to Carnegie, Mellon, and John D. Rockefeller. Obama and his education secretary are among the worst of the lot. Chris Hedges explains the scam brilliantly. This is from an interview with Sonali Kolhatkar of Uprising Radio, recorded in April.
We are driving out our most experienced teachers. We are breaking the unions that gave teachers an adequate standard of living and basic amenities, including benefits like retirement plans, and replacing them with charter schools and instructors, people who have very little training. They're bringing in, of course, a lot of these kids from AmeriCorps. There's a program in New York City where they go out and recruit kids to come in for a few years. And they are taught exclusively to teach around these tests. And these tests celebrate a very narrow kind of intelligence, an analytical kind of intelligence, which is needed or promoted by corporations, so that on the upper level, when you do very well on these tests, you can be funneled into Bank of America or Goldman Sachs. And on the lower level, you're sort of barely literate, both in terms of reading and numeric ability, and you service the corporate state in low-wage, non-unionized jobs like Walmart and other places. That's the capacity to teach students to think, which is very different from teaching them what to think, is being utterly destroyed. And we're seeing on the university level a complete withering away of the humanities, that because of the budget cuts, it's not just affecting lower levels of public education, but public universities. And you have all sorts of state universities just that are slashing and burning, philosophy departments, theater departments, foreign language departments, because education is now becoming purely vocational, which is, of course, what these tests are about, and what the breaking of the teachers' union and the replacement of experienced and well-trained teachers, many of whom spent thousands of dollars on their education to become a teacher, and replacing them with instructors who adhere to this narrow vision that is imposed by corporations on our education.
Now, you bring up a very good point in your article, Why the United States is Destroying Its Education System, which is we should treat with great suspicion why people like Mayor Mike Bloomberg and people like Eli Broad are so interested more, in recent years in education. These are not educators. You know, these are politicians and CEOs of big corporations, people who've become extremely wealthy. So connect that line for us.
Well, this goes all the way back to the turn of the century, people like Carnegie and Mellon, who hated the humanities. And the reason they hate the humanities is because a liberal arts education is designed to make you challenge structures and assumptions. It goes all the way back to Socrates to make you ask questions. And we live in an age where the mantra and cant of unregulated capitalism, unfettered capitalism, laissez-faire capitalism, the idea that the marketplace should somehow rule human behavior, something that defies some 3,000 years of economic history, is dead. Because, of course, these institutions, which stole $17 trillion in wealth from the low wage, from small shareholders, and have created a kind of permanent underclass, $40 trillion in worldwide wealth, have had to loot the U.S. Treasury. And this has, of course, been replicated in Europe in order to resurrect themselves after fraudulent activity. And what they don't want are any kinds of critiques coming out of the education system that begin to look at essentially a dead idea, look at a failed system. What they want are systems managers who serve this system. And that's, of course, what a figure like Lawrence Summers is, the former president of Harvard, and one of the architects of the whole banking collapse. He was the Treasury Secretary under Clinton and deregulated the banking system, which has destroyed our banking system. And Canada, which didn't deregulate their banking system, has had no bank collapses. And so they want people who are trained in this kind of, have these narrow analytical skills, a narrow analytical intelligence, and can be funneled into a system without questioning it. And that's precisely why you have hedge fund managers setting up schools. It has the twin effect of making sure that corporate ideology, which is largely dominant within all of the economics departments of major universities, you can't get tenure unless you buy into this stuff. It creates a system by which we don't even have the capacity to ask the questions anymore.
And it seems as though teachers' unions are the perfect targets because it targets two issues that are anathema to corporate hedge fund managers and their ilk, which is that you undermine the union capabilities, the collective bargaining abilities of a strong unionized force in the country. So you basically, you know, get to steal money from millions of dollars from hardworking middle Americans. And then, of course, you also get to undermine their ability to teach young Americans how to question corporate culture and question the system. So it's almost sort of the perfect, teachers' unions are the perfect target.
Yes, and they're the sort of last readout. Tragically, what the elite has done quite effectively, and this has certainly been furthered by because they control the systems of information, is to turn non-unionized working-class, middle-class people on public sector employees and say, look, you know, why are you spending your tax dollars giving retirement benefits and pension plans and health insurance to public employees when you don't have it? Well, of course, it's the wrong question. Why did we allow our working class and many people in our middle class to be stripped? Why have we taken away the protections that once provided these benefits for American workers? We're all being reduced to sort of fighting over the scraps. And the last sort of organized structure of labor is our teachers, our public sector employees. So there are on many levels, they are slated for destruction. And I live in the state of New Jersey where our governor has openly declared war on teachers' unions. But that's been replicated by Democrats like Andrew Cuomo in New York. And it's kind of bipartisan assault. And Barack Obama's right up there. His Secretary of Education is
Arne Duncan.
A huge advocate of charter schools. Well, I think it's important to understand that what we call American culture is really corporate culture, and that was instilled within the American public after World War I by public relations industries, which were employed by corporations to turn consumption into a kind of inner compulsion. I'm not sure that was true, certainly in during the 19th century. There were other values, thrift, the sense of a common good, community, self-effacement, which corporate culture set out to demolish and to replace with this kind of cult of the self, this hedonism, this false individualism where it's all about me. There's some thoughtful Malcolm Cowley's intellectual memoir right after the war, An Exile's Return, I think, talks about this quite presciently. And I think when we talk about American culture, what we're really talking about are the values of corporate culture that have been pounded into American society for the last century and resulted in the kind of moral rot that is embraced across the culture and has led to financial institutions that are just openly criminal enterprises who sacrifice the working and the middle class for the greed of a tiny power elite. And there's no check anymore on it. There's no way to put a hold on it because they own the government. They own the systems of information. They own the judiciary. As John Ralston Saul said, we've undergone a kind of coup d'etat in slow motion, and they've won. And now they're going to take over. I mean, these are the financial institutions that failed so disastrously in managing our economy are now volunteering to step in and take over our educational system. You have to admire the hubris of it.
Chris Hedges, with his usual astute analysis of what's happening and why it is happening. In many countries of the West, the national government subsidizes higher education. A student who is good enough to be admitted to a national university can receive a first-rate education at very little expense. This applies even in Mexico, which is one of the poorest states here in the Earth's northwest quadrant. The situation is beginning to change worldwide as financiers and bankers demand that all public services be shut down or sold off cheap to a profit-making corporation. In the United States, we're number one, at least in abolishing vestiges of social democracy. Our subsidized public university education pretty much vanished a generation ago. Even in our so-called state universities, the state now pays a very small share of the university's operating expenses. Most revenue now comes from research contracts from the Pentagon, from sweetheart joint ventures with big corporations, and from exorbitantly high tuition fees charged to the students. You'd think that, if funding is so scarce, universities would take the obvious step of abolishing the football and basketball teams. Ha ha ha! Instead, as we've seen, they'll abolish the departments of foreign languages, philosophy, drama, music, and history. And as Hedges noted, this suits the CEOs just fine. They don't want a bunch of working-class kids with liberal arts education running around and critiquing the system, especially if the kids are unemployed, which they're likely to be. At today's high prices, how can a working-class kid possibly afford a college education? As usual, Father Guido Sarducci has a solution that's as elegant as it is simple.
I find that education, I think it don't matter where you go to school, Italy, America, Brazil, it's all the same. It's all just memorization. And it don't matter how long you can remember anything, just so you can pare it at the back for the test. And I got this idea for a school I would like to start. Something called the 5-Minute University. And the idea is that in 5 minutes, you learn what the average college graduate remembers 5 years after he or she's out of school. With the cost of like $20. That might seem like a lot of money, $20 just for 5 minutes. But that's for like a tuition, cap and gown rental, graduation picture, snacks, everything. Everything included. You know, like in college, you have to take a foreign language. Well, at the 5-minute university, you can have your choice. Any language you want, you can take it. Say if you want to take Spanish, what I teach you is, ¿Cómo está usted? That means, how are you? And the answer is, muy bien. Means very well. And believe me, if you took 2 years of college Spanish, 5 years after you're out of school, ¿Cómo está usted? Muy bien. About all you're going to remember. So in my school, that's all you learn. You see, you don't have to waste your time with the conjugations, vocabulary, all that junk. You just forget it anyway, and what's the difference? Economics, supply and demand. That's it. Business is, you buy something and you sell it for more. theology. I'm going to have a theology department, you know, since I'm a priest, it's only right. And what you have to learn in theology is the answer to the question, where is God? And the answer is, God is everywhere. Why? Because he likes you. That's kind of a combination of the Disney and Roman Catholic philosophy. It's just a perfect for the late 70s or early 80s, you know? Just a perfect. Well, after the courses are all over, then it's a time for a little Easter vacation. No time to go to Fort Lauderdale. Only lasts like 20 seconds. But what I do for you, I like to turn on a sun lamp. You know, I give you a little glass of orange juice. That's in the snack part, orange juice. And then after vacation, you know, after you swallow it real quick, then it's a time for the final exams. I say to you, como está usted? You say, muy bien. Where is God? The God is everywhere. Economics is supply and demand. Then I put on your cap and a gown. I get out to my Polaroid, the camera, you know, make a little snap and flash a picture for you. I give you the picture. You give me $20. I give you a diploma and your college graduate ready to go. I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure, right next door to the 5-Minute University, I might have opened up a little law school. You know, you got another minute?
If you want to destroy quality public education, it makes good sense to fund it inadequately. From the perspective of a hedge fund manager, doing so has several good effects. It makes it easier to privatize the school. It makes it easier to bust the teachers' union and to get rid of those pesky liberal arts courses that encourage critical thinking. It keeps property taxes down. And it makes school administrators more receptive to intrusion by corporate marketers who love to pitch their products inside a classroom to a captive audience of children who have been trained to obey authority inside the school. We'll hear more on this last point from the Canadian documentary Corporations in the Classroom. Here they focus on two notorious American marketing schemes, bus radio and Channel 1 TV.
For in a world of getting your message out, this is more than a school bus. It's a radio station. An hour outside of Boston, the neighboring communities of Monson and Palmer have each been approached by a new marketing concept called bus radio. And both school administrators are considering it, seriously.
I received this pamphlet in the mail. Bus radio, free to all schools. And it's basically talking about it's a bus safety program is what they make the pitch here.
Without a doubt, as dollars for education, I think, have become more limited, school systems has forced to look for partnerships. And partnerships come with commercials and commercialization.
Well, I think it's the revenue that's really raised our eyebrows more than the safety. I don't think that, you know, in this district, we don't feel that we have a safety problem on our buses, nor a behavior problem.
I wish education was funded at a level where we wouldn't have to do those things.
The revenue estimate for our size was approximately $5,000 for this particular year.
Bus radio guarantees advertisers a captive audience on their way to and from the classroom. And they're using the schools of Massachusetts as a pilot project. It's a tempting decision for cash-strapped school administrators.
I always say that superintendents are always sticking their necks out, and I've always said that giraffes are the one animal that can see the forest for the trees. So I think that's good guidelines for superintendents or administrators who are faced with tough decisions.
In Monson, these long-necked decisions seem to be crying out for a guillotine. And the parents of the community were already sharpening the blade.
we have questions, and why hasn't the school committee held, you know, public hearings on this, and why hasn't there been more information home? Why wasn't a survey sent home to parents? Is this something you would like? Is this something you wouldn't like?
Oh, elbow!
As I look further into it, I saw there's essentially no benefit for our school district. We're placing our children, who are a captive audience, on a public school bus that our tax dollars have paid for at the hands of an advertising company, essentially a marketing firm that wants to make profit.
The advertisers are hoping that kids will actually listen to the radio on the bus. The kids might have other ideas.
Some kids like to read. Most kids actually like to socialize, so like with their friends. And some kids, believe it or not, actually do their homework on the bus.
I'd rather listen to the radio in the car than on the bus. I usually just talk to my friends, and I usually bring some of my rock collection on, and people look at them.
In Boston, where they know a thing or two about starting revolutions, the bus radio concept was not exactly welcome. Parents and academics took to the streets in protest.
He'll be going to kindergarten next year, and he'll be riding a school bus. So the thought of bus radio makes me really unhappy.
You know, they're a captive audience, and it's commercial radio. Imagine that. Radio, hey, hey, oh, oh. We're turning off bus radio, hey, hey. We need legislation as well, you know. In Quebec, you can't advertise to kids under 13.
It's opening a hornet's nest in terms of schools making available to marketers children.
It seemed everybody in Massachusetts was getting angry about school board decisions to buy into the notion of advertising on school buses.
We put together a petition and had many community members, I think a couple of hundred, sign these letters to the school committee.
In Monson, the parental disapproval and petitions changed the mind of the school administrators, and they finally said no to bus radio. But in Palmer, with money even tighter, the administrators are hoping to go ahead and get $5,000 in exchange for morning broadcasts like this one.
Bus Radio.
That sucks. Tickets at busradio.com. We'll choose a name at random, and if you're the winner, we'll give a pair of tickets to your bus driver, too. You guys can hang out together, maybe share a large Coke. Email us as soon as you get home. Sucks. Tickets at busradio.com.
As bus radio expands into four states, they may soon head north. But that's not all the corporations have in mind for enhancing public education. If you think they're watching too much TV at home, just imagine 7 million kids forced to watch commercial messages on school TV as part of the morning class. In this inner city school, for the last 19 years, generations of children have started their class with 10 minutes of television news and 2 minutes of hard commercials. Brought to 7 million kids every day in America by Channel 1.
We're probably going to get 42-inch platforms. We're going to get easy TVs instead of HD TVs. We don't have a signal yet. But we're going to mount one over there, up on that wall. You can see it from the fourth floor. And then we're going to mount one over up here on the concrete, so you can see it from the fifth floor. You know, having this is great. We're going to have strong announcements. We're going to have we'll be able to keep Channel 1 on all day up here.
Today on Channel 1, a look at the new...
The good folks at Channel 1 will provide free television sets to every classroom. And all they want in exchange is that the kids watch 12 minutes a day.
Hey guys, welcome to Channel 1. I'm Alexander Marquardt. It's almost the weekend, but before then, we've got a great show for you. Mika Nichols is at the White House with the story.
The president has signed a bill that he says could keep some illegal immigrants out of the U.S.
We thought about it as a faculty, and we decided that the exchange for the equipment, for the chance to see a quality program targeting young people, in exchange for showing a few commercials, which many of the students would see anyway, was not a trade-off that we couldn't live with.
But it was a trade that one man in Alabama decided he couldn't live with. Jim Metrock, who describes himself as an old-fashioned capitalist, has now retired from his family's steel business. He now spends his days battling the growth of what he sees as wolves in the classroom. For 10 years, Metrock has become the shepherd in the campaign against Channel One.
We live in a real world. Give whatever you're going to give to the school. Let them put your name in the newsletter or let them put a name on a plaque. That's fine. Just don't mess up the curriculum. Don't take time away from school children like Channel One does. Don't make these kids listen to your forced advertising. You know, that's a lost instructional week of school a year if they watch Channel One.
In California, a wildfire
what
in the winter.
Much of this commercial use of schools is all about is it's in form of indentured servitude.
And touching off fires across
and they loan a needy school equipment, which they can never own.
Gatorade presents the play of the week.
And then it is paid off. It is worked off. Not by the superintendent who approves the contract, and not by the school board or the teachers, but by the kids. They have to watch this show 12 minutes a day and exchange something of economic value, their attention,
we want your best
just to be able to pay the debt. And the kids lose a week's worth of school a year. These kids' rights are being abused simply because a company has something and they dangle it in front of a needy school system. I think that's terrible.
We're in some ways in such a crisis in public education that anything you can get, I mean, if you're not sacrificing your mission and who you are and you're able to create these partnerships, then, you know, I'm willing to consider anything because it's that important to make sure that these students get what they need.
When I started this, Channel One was talking about being the next MTV. They had plans for Channel One movies. It would be a Channel One brand, Channel One clothing. They wanted to resonate in the malls of America. And basically, we ruined their brand. They spent a lot of money trying to create a brand, and we undid it. This is probably the most visited site on my website. That here are some examples of what your child, if they graduated in 2006, as they've seen in middle school and high school. We have Dude, Where's My Car, which was a stoner movie, a movie that normalized drugs. Channel One had a big ad campaign for that. Here's a man in a bathtub with two women selling a Sims game that a lot of parents might have a problem with. They will sell an anchor position to somebody who wants to plug their latest movie, CD, or TV show. I think it is an abomination of what they, what a news show should be about.
Alex Molnar heads up a research institute examining the commercialization of public education.
Of the 42 or so million American school children in public schools, about 35 million, give or take, are regularly subjected to commercial message in some systematic way in the schools that they attend.
And that about does it for New World Notes for today. There's much more to say about American education and schooling, and we'll have more to say in the future. Thanks to Sonali Kolhatkar and Uprising Radio for the Chris Hedges interview. UprisingRadio.org. Thanks to Robin Upton and Unwelcome Guests for Corporations in the Classroom. That's UnwelcomeGuests.net. For more information about New World Notes, pictures, links, and a free archive of past installments, check out our own website, newworldnotes.blogspot.com. You'll get to my non-carborundum. You are not alone, and even though at times no one seems to be listening, please keep striving to tell the truth. Ciao.